What is up, gangsters? Welcome to Base 3 Podcast, episode 112. This week, I was joined once again by my good friend, Jordan. The episodes with Jordan are always really enjoyable for me to have the conversation just because Jordan's such a good conversationist and really well-spoken and asks some very good questions. If you have enjoyed the previous episodes of Jordan, you'll definitely enjoy this one. We got into a bunch of really kind of random topics, mostly about our, we started off talking about our MBA careers and the benefit of sport and activity outside the gym and why it is so important to, if you are building a good level of fitness or working on building a good level of fitness to, well, how you should be exploiting that outside the gym. And how it's kind of a waste if you don't. That's my opinion on it anyway. We got into a bunch of other topics that aren't always related to fitness necessarily, but they're definitely related to health and well-being. Talking a lot about why it's important to love yourself and how if you're not looking after yourself first, you're not going to really be in a great position to look after anyone else. Then went off to talk about optimizing productivity. Jordan works for himself, so getting tips and ideas on how controlling your health and fitness can be useful for controlling your productivity and how you can approach them the same. And then we kind of got into the subject of hate, which I am feeling very passionate about at the moment. Just how it's a waste of energy to hate something, but that's a really bad explanation of the conversation we actually had together. I just really enjoyed having this conversation with Jordan. Like I said, there wasn't a whole lot of fitness in there, but there was a lot of information about a lot of different stuff that I found really valuable to have that conversation. So hopefully you will enjoy listening to it as well. This last week, we did some upgrades in the gym. And what that's allowed us to do is to put on another stream for the Rise program. If you are not familiar with Rise as a training program, it's our competitive CrossFit program that we run at Base 3 that I program, and then myself and some of the coaches here have been coaching. The program is for anybody wanting to be competitive in the sport of fitness. Now, what that means is you're not preparing necessarily to do competitions. If you are wanting to do competitions and actually compete in the sport of CrossFit, this is a really valuable tool for you to do that. But at the moment, it's more so just for you to allow you to express your fitness. If you are looking to work a little bit harder in the gym, in a controlled environment, have those controlled exposures to intensity and have yourself prepared and set up to be able to do the sport of fitness fast. And what does competitive fitness mean? It doesn't, like I said, mean competing, but it does mean lifting under fatigue, doing controlled movements quickly, so doing fast thrusters, learning things like handstand walks and muscle up progressions and all the stuff that would enable you to be able to compete in the sport of fitness. We've just launched a new program. If you think you'd be interested in stepping up your intensity or interested in being a bit more competitive with the sport, head over to base3.ae/rise for more information or get in touch with me directly. We have got a 6 and 7:30 a.m. spot every single day of the week, and then we do a big 10 a.m. session on the weekend. It's 5 days a week, and it's 60 minutes of training. It's kind of ideal if you are 35 to 45 year old, full-time, if you have a full-time job and a family and other life commitments that most normal people have, then this program is ideal for you. It doesn't have the same volume and intensities that some of the other competitive programs do have. I believe this program is a lot more palatable for just your average Joe and your person wanting to be a bit of a weekend warrior. I hope you enjoy episode 112 with myself and Jordan, and I hope you have a fantastic weekend. Enjoy. What's going on, team? Welcome to Base 3 Podcast, episode 112. I didn't remember what number it was. I checked before we got on air because I always manage to stuff it up. I'm back with Jordan. Jordan, what's going on?
Hello. It's all good.
How are we?
We're good today.
How are you feeling today? We played a bit of basketball last night. How is the body?
I worked out twice yesterday, including basketball, and I now have blisters on my feet and decided to take a rest day.
So me and Jordan are working on, if J. Cole can get a contract in Rwanda, then I'm sure me and Jordan can get picked up on some sort of amateur basketball team. We've got a little basketball group. I've never played basketball before,
Jordan, you ever played basketball prior to last week?
Yep. So I'm 2 weeks in. I'm NBA pro so far.
Yeah.
Making 100% of shots and no fouls, which is great.
So me and Jordan, a couple of guys from the gym, have started playing a bit of, I think the term's pick up basketball. You just get together and just play for that in the organization.
Yeah,
structure.
I mean, it's a pretty high skill, high intensity. You need to be pretty damn good to be able to even qualify. And I think we all
fit. Yeah, we all fit that bill for sure.
Yep.
Real talk, me and Jordan are fucking terrible at basketball. It's hilarious.
You're really good.
No, I'm not. Here's the thing is and this is the same for all sports. If anybody who's got a decent residual level of fitness is your ability to compute skills or high skill is better if you're more cognizant, and you're more cognizant if you have a high level of fitness.
Yep.
So if you watch at the start, and this is one thing I've noticed across the last 5 weeks, is everybody who is good is really good, and everyone who is shit is really shit at the start.
Yep.
But if you have a decent level of fitness, as it starts to go on and people start to fatigue, it starts to level out. Like, I made more shots compared to the other guys who are better at the end of the game than the start. Like, at the start, I missed more, or it looked like I was missing more. I missed more tackles. I made less runs. I was less effective. Towards the end, I felt like I was, like, fucking crushing everybody. But it was just because I was running more.
Yep.
But that happened to a lot of people, and that wasn't just me. We were playing against Rowan and Tyler yesterday, and they seemed to get more confident and better as the game went on, but they've just got the fitness to last the game.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't, and I'm not saying, and everyone who we play with goes to the gym is pretty fit, but I think it's your sport-specific fitness is different from your gym fitness. And week one, it killed me. And now we're on like playing 5 weeks now, and it's just easier to move for longer and not get as tired as it goes on. And this is interesting. I have zero skills, zero coordination. I'm not great at ball sports, but just being fit allows you to look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's got a good level of fitness, so you can't really outrun everyone, but maybe you spend a bit more time like deciding where you run, deciding like where you play. You're a bit more aware of how much effort you need to put in at any given moment. You don't have to run up and down the court every single time.
You've got more energy to think. You're not as breath, you're not panicking, you're not breathing as hard. So you have that extra second to look around and be like, oh, it makes sense if I move there.
Yeah.
And you've got that time to think. You've got half a second on the person who isn't as fit as you. And I was saying when I was fighting, the only reason I did any good as a fighter was in round three of a three-round fight is I looked fitter than the person I was fighting. So I won some fights on decisions just by being fitter. The guy was 10 times better and more experienced than me, but just you look fitter, or you're able to hold yourself better or think about what's going on. You're just able to execute skills a little bit better if you're less tired.
Yeah, I think the more you do something, the more you can focus on how efficiently am I doing stuff.
Yeah.
I've not been a fighter, but I would imagine that you can go all out guns blazing, like Ngannou won, and then someone who's a bit more skilled can sort of
conserve that energy.
Yeah. And the same with basketball, like 100% same with CrossFit. It's like you can work out, right, where do I need to put 10 out of 10 effort here? Where can I pull back a little bit, recover? I think that's an efficiency thing as much as
100% efficiency. And that's when you look at fitness as well, as there's two ways to get better at a movement. You can improve your efficiency of that movement, or you can improve your capacity of that movement. So if you're looking at playing a sport, and your efficiency on the court when you're playing basketball is where you move to receive the ball, so you don't have to work as hard to receive the ball, or you put yourself in a better position to defend so you don't have to run back, is being efficient. Or you can just get insane conditioning, so you're able to do all those things without having as much of a negative impact on your performance.
Yeah. But when you look at sort of the best sports players, I think the difference can be, I remember David Beckham was, he would just take time to kick the ball from free kicks again and again and again. And I wonder if conditioning's like a major factor, but it only gets you so far. And then the most skilled people probably drill skills beyond a certain point.
Yeah. And again, that would be, again, movement efficiency. How well do you strike the ball? How good are you at repeating that one thing over and over and over and being really good at executing that one task?
Yeah.
And then the other side of that would be the ability to do that in a more enduring manner, do that over and over and over again under fatigue whilst you're tired, and have the same cognitive execution that you would if you were fresh.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
But the dynamic's been fun with basketball. I was saying earlier that I think you said it is people who are, so we play and there's three coaches playing.
Yep.
Not necessarily all basketballers or at all basketballers. Rowan's very impressive. Rowan's a very good basketballer.
Yeah.
Mr. Dunk himself. If I had 3 meter long arms, I'd be able to dunk as well. He's a freak.
He reminds me of Mrs. Incredible.
Yes.
Mrs., by the way, Rowan.
Mrs. but those players tend to take, apart from Tyler, he was just an asshole for 5 minutes, and take more of like you point out, a leadership role, or like a more encouraging, trying to like get the team rallied up and trying to support people and play those type of roles. And the person I thought was best at that was Ricardo. The first couple of weeks, and we were all like very green. There was a bunch of times where he could have just took the shot, took the points and whatever, but instead gave the opportunity to someone else to have a go. Or like, rather than just running the play and scoring the points, like took it back to a point where everyone had an opportunity to regroup, reset and run the play again, giving people's opportunities to practice and succeed. And even with you last week, is your first time playing it. The first time you touched the ball, you didn't even know how to hold a ball. And it went from being like that to hitting like half your shots by the end of the game. And I think it was, I got a video, it was just Rowan giving you loads of opportunities to try and practice, and you build that, get the reps in to get better at it and practice it.
That's what I've noticed. Better.
Yeah. Versus if like you were playing with someone who's very ego driven and they were just like, nah, he's shit, I'm not going to give him the ball, I'm going to try and do it myself. Then, which I think the girls were doing that to us last night. I think like they was, I'm just going to take it because Craig's going to miss, and just doing this. Come to them, Paul. I'll make it, I promise.
Do you think about it consciously then? So I noticed this when we did the first session, is you know you're terrible. And like when I played football in the past, like, I don't really play football anymore because I never played at school. But every time I've been now in the UK, everyone's so good that unless you're good, you're terrible. So it's not really that enjoyable anymore. But when everyone sucks, I think a big differential of whether you're going to stick with it is whether or not you think, wow, I'm terrible, I'm not going to get better, or wow, I'm terrible, but I've had a good time. Yeah. People are encouraging, and they're going to, and I'm going to get better. So do you guys think about that? Or did you think about that when you started? Did you think about that? Do you think Ricardo thought about that straight away when he was trying to get people together for this?
I don't know if Ricardo did. I definitely did not. At no one point did I think this is going to be a really developmental experience and we're all going to learn a new skill and we're going to get better and continue to play and we're going to have da da da. It was purely for me about, I like the thought of getting outside, out of the gym environment, and testing the fitness that I've earned in the gym. So like if I want to stay athletic and being fit and being strong, if you only are fit and strong in the gym, then you're pretty useless. Like there's not a lot of real world application that being able to do snatches and thrusters have, but being able to turn and jump, accelerate, catch and throw, is that's more applicable. And if you can do that at a high level, a high enough level that you can enjoy doing it, then that's useful. You can go and play sport, you can enjoy and have the social interactions that you get from playing sport. So for me, it was literally like have fun and use the fitness that you've earned in the gym. And then it became like, wow, I'm really not as good as I thought I would be. I want the skill development that comes with this and the movement mastery that comes with being able to hit more shots or dribble past people and learn that. So now for me, it's using my fitness, getting outdoors, not so much sun because we play at night, but and then being a novice again and trying to learn and skill and the reward that I get from being like, oh yeah, I made that shot, that was really cool, I'm happy with that, I'm better than I was last week, which I think at the moment is a very steep curve because we're also new to it. Yeah. So it's very enjoyable at the moment. It's like when you first learn how to snatch, you're like, God, I can do 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds.
Yeah.
So soon it'll get to the point where it's like, yeah, you're not as good as your growth isn't as quick as
you rock it up for a few weeks, it gets really addictive.
Fucking
then,
amazing.
Then
so
all,
good.
All of a sudden it's like, oh my God. Yeah, you just hit some whatever random plateau it is. Whatever, how strong you are, I suppose. No, you're 100% right. Is you do something new, and like each week, you're gonna be like, "Wow, I'm so much better than I was."
Yeah.
Minutes ago.
And I feel like there'll be a point. I heard a guy talking about this on the podcast. He was talking about learning to play the didgeridoo randomly, and it was like,
"How come this is like the third time we've talked about the didgeridoo
on the podcast?"
I think it might be the second time.
Anyway, Mike McGoldrick's learning to play the didgeridoo. And he spoke about, and I'm sure whatever skill it'll be the same like milestones in progression. And there'll be this point where you're like, I'm shit, this is not getting any better. Then you, all of a sudden you reach this level where it's just like, oh no, I can do that skill, I can do that thing now. And you build on that. So I'm sure there'll be a point where we all get to a point where it's like, you're making like 50% of your shots, or you're able to dribble evenly with both hands or some, or move with the ball, or better awareness, where it's like, cool, I know that now, I can use that next time, so then I can practice a new skill because I've locked that. And it's like when you come to the gym and it's like, okay, now I know how to squat properly, I've nailed my squat, I'm good at squat, I can start loading it, or I can start doing it with more intensity, or you get to that level where you can, like you, like I said, you've just ticked that and that's there now. So I think soon, or in a couple of weeks, I'm hoping we get to the point where it's like, yep, I know what position I need to be off the ball, I know how to shoot properly, da da da, so I can start having more fun and unlocking new levels of enjoyment with that.
Do you think it's important to use this fitness as a base to do other activities, or do you think that the fitness in itself should be good enough?
I don't know, it's kind of, that's the whole argument against CrossFit being a real sport, right? Because it's just working out. So yeah. if your job and you're getting paid to do CrossFit for a living is to play the sport of fitness, then but then what about recreationally? Is it, is there enough of CrossFit to go around from like a movement, and like CrossFit is very linear, only works in like the, in a single plane pretty much. Is that enough enjoyment for people? Is that enough of a challenge? Is it a, is it rewarding enough for people to just go to the gym and do CrossFit?
Is it combative enough as well? Because you are less on, you have team events.
Yeah.
And I think they're fine, like, but they're very individual. It's like, get your head down. How much can you, how much pain can you take on a row? How much pain can you...
There's not a lot of thought and strategy that goes into a CrossFit work. Well, pacing, but not like strategy. There's no chess.
But as in, when you're with, even when you're on, with a team of people, it's, you have transitions and you have tactics, but it's, a lot of it is just like, how much endurance do you have?
Yeah.
How much strength do you have? And then there's switchovers and rests and things like that. If you compare it to doing something like a team sport, that's very, very different. And also the opposition is very, very different. So it's really cool. It's like a very, very different challenge and a different mindset. And you've got to think really differently. And I think it's a really good use of your fitness to try these different things, especially now, like when it's summer and there's not as much stuff going on.
So yeah, what are we gonna do?
How long do you reckon we can keep playing for?
Funnily enough, last night was only 32 degrees, whereas 3 weeks ago it was 40 degrees, so it's getting cooler. Yeah, just keep playing.
I think keep playing until it's completely uncomfortable.
Yeah, there's gonna be a point where you're too sweaty to actually hold a ball properly, and it's gonna no, but I you're right, like if your sole fitness outlet is going to the gym, I think you're selling yourself short. I think there's a lot that is missing if you're, whether you're doing CrossFit or just going to the gym to bodybuild. I think if you're only going and doing yoga, you're only going and doing like spinning classes, I think there's so much more that you would enjoy and benefit from, whether you know it or not. I think like you've been hiking, you've been doing all this other stuff, and there's a group of people that go out and hike often and use that fitness that you have to be able to go and enjoy the outdoors, and there's so many other benefits and stress benefits and physical benefits and mental benefits to being able to get out and do stuff like that and switch off and all those other things. And I think if you're just fixing, I would rather go to the gym than do that. You're probably losing out on a lot of things.
I try to make a distinction between stuff that you do which is a kind of it's about you and stuff that you do which is more about other people. And that applies in fitness, that applies in work, that applies in what you're doing. So a lot of people doing self-improvement stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is like, I need to meditate. I need to read this book. I need to journal. I need to work on myself, my fitness. And I can go to the gym in my own time, and I can lift weights to make myself stronger, and I can do endurance to make myself fitter.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, cool. But like, if you think about, you know, in my opinion, the majority of the opportunities you find in life are going to come from relationships you have with people.
And conversations you have with people.
Yeah, because there's only so much that you as one person can output.
Yeah.
Even if you're the smartest, most driven person in the world.
That's a very good point.
So how much of that time are you spending doing stuff that is conducive to your relationship? So how, like, you know, simple stuff like, are you having calls? You're keeping up to date with your close friends? Mm-hmm. Are you doing stuff like this? Are you doing team sports? Are you networking if you're in a business setting? Like, are you doing stuff that doesn't just involve you? Not in a selfish way, not in an egocentric way, but just because I think it's really, really important that you keep on top of relationships. And it's really hard to do if you're constantly focused on, I need to be the best version of myself. Then sometimes it can be a little bit challenging to say, I don't need to be 100% on that one specific field if I'm also have healthy relationships and can hang out with lots of people. And
100%. I think as well is this is probably the one of the key benefits of being in a relationship, whether that's like a marital relationship or just having a close friend or having someone you can talk to, is you miss out on those conversations unless you're if you're not putting yourself in positions where you can have deep, meaningful conversations with people, which sounds a bit hairy-fairy, but me and Em have these conversations about our future and self-development and growth and emotions and things that you're like, you wouldn't just have these conversations day to day with people unless you feel real comfortable, but you discover so much by talking about these things.
Yeah.
And I think having someone or having the opportunity to be able to have those conversations opens up so much opportunity for you to grow and learn about yourself, which you would never have if you don't put yourself in the position to have those conversations.
Yeah.
I think this is something that I've realized recently is I'm one of those people like who could sit, we could drive to Abu Dhabi and there could be no music on and there could be no talking and just driving. I'd be okay with that. It wouldn't be awkward. I could just sit in silence and it doesn't bother me. And I'm not a driver of conversations. I'm not like, oh, what do you think of this? Or what? Or like to engage and initiate in conversations. But I do really enjoy being a part of conversations. I do really enjoy back and forth. And like, I really enjoy doing this with you because you ask really good questions and I like engaging in conversations with you. And I feel like you get to explore and express. And I think that's really developmental in yourself. Like even if it's just me talking shit like I've been doing for the last 60 minutes and going, what the fuck are you talking about? It's still a learning experience and it's very enjoyable. And whether anybody listens to this and gets anything out of it or not, it's still been beneficial for me to have this conversation.
Yeah. Well, you definitely learn stuff by exploring ideas. I think you definitely learn stuff by interacting with people because it kind of like literally throws curveballs. Mm. Like, because you've got to clash with people to some degree, even if you're good friends, like what they're thinking might not be 100% aligned with what you're thinking, but then you have to evaluate it.
Yeah.
I think if you like listening is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Like, cause you can't just be like, what am I going to say next? What am I going to say next? Mm. But
you're just actually taking what the person's saying and then process it and digest it and go, 100%. Oh yeah. Okay. I see.
100%. And I think, it comes back down to, try it. You know, for me, I'm conscious that with my job is, I work in software development. So a lot of
he's not a professional podcaster, by the way.
I'm not.
Despite what you may think.
So a lot of it is you've got to go and learn stuff so that you can write on a computer. The computer just agrees with everything you say.
Yeah.
But the point being is I've been trying to actively think, right, there's a big component of my life that is easy to neglect, which is all the relationships and doing things with other people. And it can be harder and it can be frustrating.
Why is that easy for you to neglect?
I think because you can spend so much time, especially with the self-improvement mindset and especially with a kind of insular mindset, like as a developer, where you just think the solution to every problem is to personally work harder.
Work on yourself and get caught in that, right?
Yeah. And the problem is you can find a lot, you can get really far. I mean, my experience has been you can get very, very far doing that.
Mm.
But sometimes you can shortcut the whole thing entirely by having the right conversation or speaking to the right person.
Someone could pull that out of you in a day or like think you'd spend all this time working on this thing, but you could have a conversation which would prompt you to figure that out yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, and obviously there's a lot of room for like work on yourself and whether that's going and formally learning a task or spending time understanding yourself. The Blackpool Wisdom for this week, do you remember what it was? I can't remember what the actual
Blackpool. You are a team of two or something.
I'm in a couple with myself. Yeah. I love myself. We work hard.
Yeah.
And M does the weekly wisdoms, and I don't know how, but every week she gets better and better. And I think it must be quite a high pressure task that she has to do every week because she doesn't do any throwaway ones. There's no like, I could just do an easy
one
this week.
They're good every week.
And they're all good.
Yeah.
And then, so she'll post it and I'll see the text and so M will quote someone else and then we'll always give her or our opinion on it. And she always checks it with me because this is in line with what basic values are and it's like an interpretation of that, but I'll always have a slightly different interpretation of that. And the one from yesterday, which was I'm a power couple with myself, I love myself, we work hard, was if you don't love yourself, how can you love other people?
Mm.
And that sounds all very deep and very philosophical, but it's not. It's simply like, if you don't respect and look after yourself, how can you do that for anybody else? On the simplest form, like if you're in a relationship or you're a father or you're a coach at a gym or you have other people that you're accountable to and for, then if you're not doing the best to put yourself in the best position to be as much service to that support network as possible, then how can you support them fully? Because that's going to end up being, you're going to be unhappy, you're going to become toxic, you're not going to be able to perform to the best of your ability. So it does literally start with you. And I'm sure there's been a million quotes that say the similar thing. But it's so true, right? If you don't develop yourself, you don't put time and energy into putting yourself first, then how can you look after anybody else?
Yeah, you want to be, it's a balancing act, I think, because you're exactly right. If you don't care for yourself, you're not going to hold yourself in a high enough regard to be able to contribute to people around you. So it's like, get that, not 100% sorted, but like get on top of that to some degree. So get on top of like making yourself, improving yourself, like being switched on, like doing all the things that we've spoken about. And then, but don't see that as the, don't get too laser focused on it to the point where you start excluding other people because you get obsessed with it.
Yeah.
It's like, get yourself to a point, like we don't all need to be perfect. Like,
but then that's the self-love, right? Because then part of that is making sure you have these interactions, communications, and that part of it is very good for your self-growth. But then that's also, not like you said, it's not neglecting that interactions with other people and making sure you get enough of that.
Yeah,
100%. And that's a selfless thing. Like giving yourself to other people is a selfless thing because you get benefit from that too.
Yeah, and having a bit of humility and self-love, like you said, to say, look, I'm not going to be perfect. Not that whole love me for who I am, who the fuck cares. No, it's like hold yourself to a high standard, but accept that, you know, you don't need to be perfect to get out there. Some people do obsess over, I've got to get everything right. And then I'll step outside my comfort zone. Yeah. I'm like, that ain't going to happen.
Nah, nothing happens there, bro.
Yeah. It'll take too slow and you'll never get there. Take too long and you'll never get there.
Yeah. What was I going to ask you then?
Well, I wanted to ask you, on the weekly wisdom, are there any times that M's come up to you with some weekly wisdom and you've gone, I'm not sure I agree with that? And then what's happened in that situation?
No, not necessarily. I think she's come at me with a quote, which I've gone, like that. And then her version... the interpretation that she's created is in the caption below it. I've gone, isn't it this as well or this as well? I've never gone, no, I don't agree with you. I've maybe some ways gone, oh, I think this as well. And she's gone, oh yeah. But more often than not, it's kind of like, yeah, I agree with that. Same, I would interpret that the same way.
I suppose you, like, if you just said that you guys are talking every day, and so the ideas that she's going to come out with are probably going to come as a result of the conversations that you guys have had in some way or another.
Yeah. So, do you know what? We've never really clashed on anything like that when it comes to what our beliefs are around what Base 3 is and our own beliefs on health and fitness and living. I think we're very similar people, which all we respect and believe each other's beliefs. Does that make sense? I got asked by someone the other day, is like, oh, do you and Em ever clash on stuff? And funny enough, me and Em were talking about it a couple of days before, saying we're actually quite lucky we work so well together because we didn't get into this, we're in a business relationship, but we didn't get into this business relationship because we thought it would both be beneficial to each other to go into business with. We were in this relationship and decided to do this together, but it just worked out really well that we're actually on the same page and we share a lot of the same beliefs. So that's really cool. So when things like that come up, it's just like, I think this is this. And even we spend a lot of time, and recently we spent a lot of time working on business development and the kind of core values of Base 3 and what Base 3 means and the back end stuff. And this is one of the most exciting and engaging conversations that I have when we get into these conversations, because it is very exciting to work on something like that. And it's very much like, oh yeah, and this, and this. Not like, oh, I don't know, that's not, and we're both coming up with independent things that both just complement each other. So I think it works out quite well.
Yeah. What are the sort of common refrains that keep coming out when you're putting together these weekly wisdoms, when you're coming up with, right, these are the core values. Are they changing or are they?
Yeah.
So how have they changed?
They're more just like iterations of the same concept, but we've just managed to articulate a little bit better.
Yeah.
So it was like one of our original values was like performance, and it was that's in the gym, that's at work, that's with putting effort into people and giving your best performance. And then that turned into hard work. It's like it was kind of the concept of, if you want anything, whether that's physical fitness, mental fitness, relationships, it takes hard work to foster something that's worth having. And then that's turned into best effort. And then best effort is like, give your best effort with the resources and time you have available, do the best you can. And again, same thing, whether that's in the gym, at home, with your career, with your health, whatever it may be, is if you do the best you can with it, we can't ask for anything more. Yep. And it's just kind of cool how that's matured from just like performance. And now it's like, give your best effort, and the depth of which we have attached ourselves to a lot deeper.
This was really nice segue, because this is exactly what I'm starting to work out, which is the difference that we were talking about earlier between just showing up, and I called it showing up hard, but you said that's probably not necessarily the best thing to be.
It depends on the environment, but yeah. That could fall into the category of self-love.
Yeah. but no, it's showing up properly for things, and I think the difference is, so an example, my mum is trying to get in shape, and what she's doing is every morning she's going for a walk, or like she's doing some squats or anything like that. For her, the most important thing right now is just showing up.
Yeah.
The actual effort she puts in is secondary to the fact that she's doing it is going to have way more benefit than she's not. If I take some of the things that I'm trying to do, coming to the gym and showing up is not particularly difficult for me now, because I've been doing it for 11 years or something, and it's just, you get itchy if you don't do it. So then it's like, right, well, you want to achieve a row. You know, it's not necessarily enough to show up. It might be, but from my experience the last couple of months, been that's not quite enough. You need to show up. You need to show up and put in a not necessarily maximal, but you need to show up and put in a good effort. You need to show up and be the best version of yourself. And that's interesting that that's something that your values have evolved, because it's something that I'm only realizing quite recently. And I think that applies to a lot of other situations.
Yeah, I said to you earlier, I have a different way of framing this, is you've got to show up and turn up. And then I'm just looking for a quote, because it's a really good Jim Jones quote. And Jim Jones is a gym that trained they got popular because they trained the guys from the 300 movie. That wasn't all CGI. Those guys were actually that jacked.
Okay.
And they're very like philosophical in their approach to training. And I really appreciate that. And tied a lot of my early findings through CrossFit was kind of stemmed from there. And there's a quote that I remember, and it was always about hard work. And this is where my attraction to hard work came from, this quote. And it was talking about like, hard work isn't just turning up and like screaming and sweating and whatever. It's like, hard work is coming in and really putting yourself into this position where you can push yourself and try really hard and giving your best effort. I will find the quote, maybe I'll post it. But the concept being like, you can't do it every day, and you don't have to slay yourself all the time. But when it needs to happen, you really have to make it happen.
Yeah.
So like, you getting like hitting your 7 minute 2K, there are going to be days where you can turn up and just row and just row and just row and accumulate some junk mileage, we'll call it. But there's going to have to be some days where you've got to turn up and push the pace, so you get that adaptation and you get into that mindset where it's like, this is going to hurt and this is going to be challenging and I'm going to push myself through it in order for you to be able to cross that barrier.
Yes.
So you're 100% right with your mum, is at the moment is showing up is enough for now to get into that routine. And depending on the weight of the goal, there's probably never going to get to a point where she's going to have to turn up for her training.
Yep.
But like, I think it applies to a lot of things, is especially in the gym, is there's, I'm big on this, and this is one of my main beliefs that I've changed over my career, is you can't smash yourself every day. And I talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
Is there's only so many, like, what's the thing is, the people talk to like about life as like a TV. You can only turn it on so many times before it starts to die, or like your heart only has so many ticks or whatever, which I don't necessarily believe either of those things, but I'm sure the TV one's true. But you can't waste, if you had like 365 training days and you started on day one of the year and you've hammered yourself at 100% every single day, you'd never get through 365 days of training.
No way.
You'd never get to your goals. You'd break and fall apart. So I think if you looked at like one, there's no right or wrong like formula for how, because it's so dependent on people's abilities and experiences. But if there's like one day a week where you know I'm going to come in, I'm going to turn up on that one day, this is a day that I'm going to go in and put myself in a vulnerable position and fucking hurt myself, then that's that one day. You'd probably get more out of that one day than if you try to do that 3-4 times a week.
Yes. Yeah. So I think you need to have enough self-awareness to be honest with yourself as to, number one, exactly as you said, you can't go in every day and go 100%.
Yeah.
So you've got to decide, right, if I want to, I think, smash something is probably the best word, honestly. Like, so if you take it away from CrossFit for a second, like, I don't know, if you're doing something related to business or if you're doing something related to your own self-improvement, there's going to be some days where you really have to be on it. Like you have to deliver a big presentation, or you have to pull a much longer session, or you have to really make sure you're not checking your phone every 20 minutes because you're not going to get any proper work done that day. Like, you can't necessarily do that every day, like you said.
Yeah.
So I think it's having the self-awareness to say, right, when am I on and when am I kind of cruising?
How do you do that with work? Because I struggle with that. Some days I'll have three, like I'll start the week and I will crush Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, and I will do like 3 weeks worth of work in 3 days, and I'd be like, oh, I am jamming, I'm on. And then some days it will be like the whole week I did like 3 hours worth of work in the entire week just because it's not there. Like I'll sit down, like I said, I'll be like distracted, checking my phone or looking for excuses to get out of work. How do you manage that? Because you work for yourself.
Yeah.
And from my understanding, you have a very informal work environment, as in like you don't have a hierarchy of management you've got to hand it to. Like you work for yourself and you're your boss.
No, it's me, mum and my dad and two other people that we work with. So it's literally, and like there's one person doing the technology. So it's not like you have a manager. So yeah, exactly.
Whereas for me, it's a little bit different because I know you've got deliverables, but then for me, it's like, I have like a meeting or whatever. Like for me, it's very, again, I know you have deliverables, but for me, I have to write something that's got to go on the board the next day. So for me, there's my like external motivation of being like, how do you keep yourself accountable for?
The context is that my deliverables are that we have to get certain features shipped. So as in when you build a technical product, you have different features. So this button does this. So this button emails a user as an example. Like you have to get that ready for a certain point in time, which is normally driven by you have another company wanting to use your software and they want this piece of functionality in by this date.
Yeah.
So the way I've worked it, which is exactly like you said, is I've got 2 weeks to do this.
Mm.
So what I'm not going to do is blitz myself for 2 weeks because that means I'm going to be incredibly tired, incredibly moody. Everything else in my life is going to go shit. My training is going to go awful. I'm going to sleep terribly. So I say, right, work a very sensible schedule, and then as and when you've gauged whether that sensible schedule is getting things done as fast as you need, you amp it up in order to meet the deadline. So there's been a couple of times when I've been like, I have 8 days of work to do in a working week.
Yeah.
So I've got 8 days of work to do in 5 days. This is the time where you actually just, you put the phone to one side or you turn it off. You do what you need to do to get it done, but you say to yourself, this is temporary. I've actually been tracking like my productivity, my sleep, like all of these different things.
Okay.
And I've noticed that you can amp up the productivity, you can amp up the amount of effort you put in for a period of time, but then it immediately drops off. It's like a pressure cooker. And for me, like I'll end up going on, quite often I end up drinking loads after I do that.
Yeah.
Like weirdly.
A deload.
Yeah. So I'm pretty good at like easing off and like, I don't drink anywhere near as much now as I used to, but if I work really, really hard, I end up doing like 6-7 day weeks, then I'll just get a massive craving for going on a huge bender.
Yeah.
So clearly something's like pressuring up and needs a release. So for me, the answer to your question is I really, really try to have cruisy days so that I can amp it up. And the cruisy days have good habits of like when I start, when I work out, when I take breaks, when I take lunch, when I eat, when my last meal is, when I go to sleep.
Okay.
And then the days when I need to amp it up and show up properly, those are the days where I kind of chuck a lot of that out the window, but I try and make sure it's for a fixed period.
So then that's you doing like, let's say sub-maximal training all week because you know on Friday you're going to have to row your 2K.
Yep.
So you're setting yourself up, you're doing the minimum effective dose, the minimum amount of training you can do to get the result done, knowing that you've got enough energy in the tank to go ham on that day you need to.
Yeah, and I think thinking about it, it's more like you're building the good habits on the cruisy days. So you're building, in our case, might be you focus on building really good movement patterns.
Mm.
So like yesterday we did a workout that involved air squats.
Yeah.
So I was like, my air squats, I think I have a tendency to cheat on the depth. So I went and got a medicine ball and was like, I'm not going for super speed here.
Mm.
I'm going to make sure I touch my ass on that medicine ball each time.
Which I saw, and I was going to stop you, but I let you do it because I knew you had a reason. I'm glad that was the reason. But then for future reference, don't do that.
Why?
Because you're not, this is like, okay, that's a good way to make sure you're going below parallel on your depth, but you're not aware of it. You're relying on the external feedback to tell you that you're going low enough. You're not creating the, you're not choosing to go to that depth and stopping, and you're not learning where that range of motion is. So sometimes having like a tactile cue as a feedback is a good way, similar to like give you a tap on the shoulder, like, hey, stop doing that. But you're not choosing to do that.
Okay.
Makes sense. So you, it's better for you to be more in tune and be more present with your movement, be like, I'm at depth now, I know where that is, versus waiting for that cue to...
So I would have thought that you would start with that, but not rely on it.
Well, yeah, essentially, yeah. But I think, and they used to do a lot of that with CrossFit at the start, is use this, like people are new to CrossFit, as a depth checker. But I think you're not creating enough tension because you're going down,
sick,
and then you get the tap, that's when you come back up. Versus you creating the tension, learning when to stop and start the movement.
Yep.
So, and especially for you, who is very, you move very well, or you move well enough, and you and you understand movement well enough to be able to be like, that's my depth. So I think the thing is, turning up is you go in, I need to be more aware of what depth is and understand what that feels like. And I always say to people go, if you're not sure if you're below parallel, was that low enough? Definitely not. Then if you're not sure, like, make sure you're aware and you know. And even me, I'm like, oh, was that low enough? And I watch it back and I read it, and it's so fucking deep, but because I don't have enough awareness through my core or my movement to be able to be like, oh yeah, that's a perfect rep, I'm good. And that's really hard to do. And a lot of time people fix on positions, they'd be like, am I below parallel?
Mm.
Well, really, who gives a fuck if you're below parallel? Like, how did it feel? What did it look like, but how did it feel to you? Were you using the right muscles? Were you squatting in a way that didn't cause any pain? Were you squatting in a way that felt good and you were able to engage the correct muscles? And were you able to create tension and hold good shape versus it going below parallel as a random marker? But I think that's the problem with CrossFit as a training methodology, when it's confused with the sport, is like, you have to go below parallel for that rep to count.
Yep.
Whereas realistically, we want you to pass through full hip flexion, so we want you to go below parallel. But if that comes at the expense of the trunk, you can keep it through your torso and you're going into spinal flexion, losing position for your back just to get below parallel, then that's not a good rep either.
That's true.
That was a... Ooh, tangent.
It's a really good point, and also a good example why you should get other people to factor in. But
that's why you should go to the gym and work with a coach.
Yeah, but the kind of point that I think I'm experimenting with this now. I'm not saying that it's 100% works, but I think that you can use the days where you're cruisy to sort of drill good habits.
Yeah.
So if that's in the gym, focus on drilling movement patterns. Whether or not you use the right exercise to drill your movement patterns is a separate question. But to the point you're asking me about how I try and pace it, how I try and work is, I try and build good habits during the day when I'm working on a cruisy day, because I'm not expending mental energy and I'm not using my willpower to get through the day at a very high intensity. I'm using that to make sure that I take breaks at the right time, work out, sleep properly, get to bed on time, don't watch stupid YouTube videos until 11:30 at night if I've got to get up at 6:30 the next day. So
you're loving yourself.
Yeah, and I think that you build that, then that becomes, you know, that's ingraining habits in yourself. That's ingraining good.
I shouldn't call it stupid, but it was like one of these YouTube influencer. To be fair, her training was actually pretty good. Not YouTube, Instagram influencer. Her training was pretty good. And what annoys me about Instagram influencers is when they have a bazillion followers and their movement is dog shit, and it's like they're squatting with like knees caving in, toes turning, like really horrible squats. It's not just like with the position of her knees, it's like she clearly has no idea what she's doing, but like 10 million people have seen this, are going to go and do that same workout even though she's got dog shit quality movement.
Yep.
This one, her movement was actually really good. She knew what she was talking about from a fitness point of view, but she was doing the whole like TikTok, like point to the dance and side videos. It's a waste of my fucking time, just tell me the information.
Yeah.
And she said something once, and it was someone asked me, why do I go to bed so early? It's like, I go to bed early so I can wake up feeling in a good mood. So I'm nicer to you. And if I'm nicer to you, you're nicer to me. So my day is better and I have a better experience. And I was like, that's so fucking true.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not just sleep. It's doing stuff that makes you happy. So if you, let's say it's hard work to go to bed early because you want to stay up and watch The Crown. Em's been addicted to The Crown. So you want to stay up and you want to watch Netflix, or you want to go and have a couple extra beers, or you want to like... not do your mobility work after training, and all these things that you know you should be doing, it's hard work to do, actually make you happier and make you a better person, allows you to be a better person to other people, so people are nicer to you, so you have a much more enjoyable day.
Yeah.
Versus if you wake up tired and you don't have breakfast and you're not hydrated and your hips feel tight so you're annoyed about it, then you're going to be a miserable bastard, you're going to be less welcoming to other people. People aren't going to be as receptive to you, and then you're not going to have as nice an experience. Your day is not as good.
Yeah, that's so true.
It's just look after your, and that's the whole thing, is like, love yourself. If you do all that shit, you're better to everyone else. Everyone's better to you. You have a much better existence.
Yeah, we got the the upswings of, or not, no, you've got the situations where you need to go hard and you need to expend like your willpower to push yourself to a higher level, either that's like mental or physical or whatever.
Yeah.
But like you said, those probably need to be a minority and switched on at the right moment.
Right.
So that, and in the meantime, you're doing all the self-love and that you're a better person to be around,
yeah,
that you are hitting all those habits that you need to help you live a better, longer, more stress-free, happier life. So good sleep, good like sleep hygiene or stretching, whatever you need to do. So again, like I think try and, yeah, what I'm trying to do is work on that balance, which is what are the days that I need to really hit things hard?
Mm.
And put those in the right place so that I can then balance all the other stuff in my life.
Do you ever match your training around that? So if you know you've got, let's say, you're doing cruisy week because you've got you haven't got any heavy deadlines. Do you go hard in training and then back off if you've got harder work weeks? I feel like you'd be aware enough to do that.
To be honest with you, no. Like that's the thing I'm trying to work on now. Okay. Is I think I'm a bit better at it on work than I am on training because I don't know. Just I'm still experimenting with that, but I think that's where I'd like to get to.
Yeah.
I think the slight problem is that sometimes you can wake up and just feel a bit more sore, and then you still have yet to get to the gym. You don't necessarily know how recovered. I mean, I think I should probably use more things like Whoop and more tracking.
I think the Whoop's a great tool, but again, it's a second opinion on what you actually
yeah.
feel, because you could wake up and have a green recovery score, which means you're raring to go, but you could feel like ass, so it doesn't matter. And I think I'm sure I said this before many times, but Whoop recovery is based on your HRV. Your HRV is your recoverability, which doesn't necessarily mean how ready you are to perform right then. It's right. how ready you are to recover from that task. So this is specifically to Whoop and HRV. So if you have a red recovery score, that means you are not likely to be able to recover well from the task. It doesn't mean you can't do the task. So if I wake up, and this happens quite a lot with athletes training for events, is kind of like you said about going wanting to go on a binge after you've done a hard stint of work being for a project, is think about when you're training, you're always in this mode where your body's like, this event's coming up and I've got to prepare myself, I've got to stay in the fight, I've got to stay in this, probably spend more time in sympathetic nervous system, and you've got to be on training hard. And you get to game day and your body's like, cool, we made it, and it dumps. And then you get like a really low HRV score, and that's quite common. It doesn't mean you're not going to be able to perform well on the event.
Yeah.
It means you're going to be trashed the next day.
Yep.
So if you turn up to the gym and it's like, I'm supposed to go and PR my one rep max squat today, but you've got a red recovery score, you probably will hit your PR, but you might take 3 days to recover from that.
Yep.
So I guess that's kind of like something to bear in mind when you think about being recovered and turning up and going hard. Just because you feel like shit doesn't mean, or just because you're not feeling good or you haven't got a great HRV score or whatever metric you're tracking, it doesn't necessarily mean you can't go hard. It's the consequences of going hard will probably be harder to recover from.
When we were running and we did the 24-hour run thing, Eamon mentioned that you want to be eating not when you're hungry, but when you're not hungry. And it's a little bit like that. It's like, I think you... unless you have an exogenous reason why you need to push yourself again and again and again and again, it's probably better, I would have thought, to take rest days or take slightly easier days when you're still feeling good. So you can 1,000,000%. Keep going.
Yeah, nailed that for sure.
Yeah.
I fully agree. Like, take the rest day before you need the rest day so you never get to the point of needing it, because then you need two, or then you're injured.
So this when you asked me, like, am I modulating? Like, I've been really bad at that. Okay. I've been basically training. I've been like, I feel fine. And I'll go into the point where I'm sleeping a bit weird. Like, I'm waking up with the, you know, you get the weird heart
palpitations.
Yeah, if you train like 6 days a week. And then, so again, today I was like, it doesn't really matter how I feel, but I will have trained in the morning and then played basketball, both of which I know are going to be pretty intense. So just take today off and don't feel bad about it. And
I try and sync my training with my week. So I know some days my coaching schedule means that, like, a Monday for me is a very heavy coaching day. I've got a bunch of hours got to fit into a Monday, so I don't expect to train hard on the Monday.
Yeah.
Funnily enough, basketball is now Monday nights, which is after a long day of coaching stuff, so not ideal. But yeah, I try and structure my week. Like, if I know I'm gonna have a busy week, I will turn my expectations down. So I'm not gonna fit 5 sessions in this week. I'm probably gonna do like maybe 3, and I'm probably gonna tone those down a little bit to accommodate being able to perform well at my coaching job, which is what I consider my priority. So
how much does coaching take it out of you? Is it just because you have to show up and, like, you have to be mentally aware the whole time, and it's like an hour that you can't switch off, basically.
Yeah, physically it's not that bad. Like physically people will say, I'm drained from coaching. It's not because it's movement and demoing and whatever. It's not that. It's what you just said, is the constantly being on. Like imagine you've got 10, 15 people in a room and you're watching as many reps as possible, trying to keep a high energy, keep them encouraged, trying to respond to every question without blowing up, and trying to make sure everyone's having a really good time and you're staying on top of creating a pumping environment, but also being really, really engaged mentally, being like, oh, that knee's caving in a little bit, or that oblique, and looking for really difficult stuff to find for an hour nonstop. And you're like, oh, done after that, and then do that for 2 or 3 hours in a row.
Yeah.
So we haven't spoke about this yet. When I mentioned this to you, is about how since we've had a new coach to the schedule, my coaching load has been a bit lighter, which has allowed me to be way more productive. The interesting thing is the hours that have been taken off my schedule are like 6, 7, 8 a.m. or 4, 5, 6, 7 p.m. But all my productivity increasing is happened during the day.
Oh,
so I usually work, I coach, say, like, let's say 6 or 9, and I coach from like 4 or 5 onwards if I was going to coach. But during the day, I don't do much coaching. I'm working 9 to 5 and I've got like a big boy job. My ability to output between 9 to 5 has gone up so much now that I've got those hours back in the evening, which at first I was kind of like, that's weird how it happens, but it obviously makes perfect sense because I'm not spending that time and energy, so I've got more energy to dump into my computer so I can work a little bit harder during the day.
Yep.
But I think it's also not having the, like if I know I'm going to go, if I'm working and it gets to like 3 o'clock and I know I've got a coach at 4, you want to start saving some of that energy for like, well, I've got to go out there and put on a good show for these guys and make sure I'm on top of my game because that's really important. So you start reeling back in a little bit and start winding down or slowing down or like shutting your laptop a little bit earlier because you know you've got some other stuff to go and do. Whereas now it's like, I'm just going to fucking hammer the keyboards till 5 o'clock because I know I've got nothing to do after that and just keep going and going and going. So that's been really interesting. And we've made more steps and achieved more things in the last, well, I think 7 or 8 weeks now than I have in the first 6 months or 5 months of this year. It's just been a really, really good developmental period for me and Em, because now we're sat in this office and have more energy to dump into these projects, which are actually moving rocks for the business. We've done things that we've said we wouldn't do for ages. We've worked on things that we've knew we've had to work on, but we haven't ever got the time or the opportunity to work on or the energy. So that's been really cool.
What do you do in the periods, time periods that you save? Do you just switch off, or do you, so do you get up at the same time or like?
Yeah, same time, go to bed same time, work at the same time. So in theory, I've gained 2 or 3 hours a day of time. But now I'm, so the first week I just finished work at 5. That was it, I'm done at 5. And was actually getting out of the gym, trying to not even hang around and train, just like go home. I just took it as like a bit of a, it's been a long 18 months or a long, what is it? It's been a long year since we've been back open again. I'm going to take some downtime and unwind a little bit. And me and Em had dinner at home at like 7 o'clock every night, and that was nice. Now it's turned into I'll train at that time, so I don't have to train in the morning or during the day, so I can work. Just there was a couple of days where I've finished coaching in the morning at like 8 a.m., come sat in this room at my desk and not left till 4 p.m. Like when I got food from the room next door, literally didn't leave, and I was just working the whole time and walked out at like 5 p.m. like, fuck, I've been in there all day, it's 5 p.m. So now I don't feel guilty. Oh, now there's nothing happening during the day which I feel guilty. Like, oh, I shouldn't train because I should be working. I shouldn't take an hour's break, I should be working. But now I'm just working right through till 5, so I'll finish at 5 and go train that way. I'm still in the gym, I still get to see people, speak to people and stuff, which I'm doing that more often now, which is cool. And me being at the coaching roster was only a temporary thing. It's just to give the new coach, Tyler, get his foot in the door, meet all the members, score some hours, get integrated into the community.
Work on his shit chat,
and then build me back into the schedule. So I'll lose a bit more of that time.
What I'm hearing though is like, you know, like for a lot of people, they'll be like, yeah, no shit, because you take people who commute and who no longer have to commute from COVID. You're actually sitting in a car doing nothing, probably listening to music or radio or podcast, whatever you want to listen to. And yet, I remember when I was commuting all the time, like, for whatever reason, you feel you can't wait to get home, and then you feel you switch off.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it is. I assume that this is something that's purely mental. But the idea that very few people, I think, feel like their day is over when they get in the car. They feel like the day is over when they get out of the car in the commute. to finally being back home, or at least that's when they feel they can properly relax, even though they might be doing.
No, I know what you mean. That makes sense. You get that. You, when you're on the drive home, on your commute home, you've got that, like, just that anxiety to get home, and then you're home, and then you're in your safe space. But I think for me, I'm good at, like, when I'm second I walk out the door, I'm like done.
But the difference is, you started at 6, you were doing some training, coaching, and then you would end your day at like 8 or 9.
Yeah.
Now, again, yes, you're doing a bit more like standing up compared to this person who's sitting in the car, but I think there's a parallel there. It's like, for whatever reason, knowing that you can't switch off until a certain point, there seems to be some regenerative effect of being able to switch off earlier, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Like, so, yeah, again, when I was sitting in the car, I would maybe sit in the car and I wouldn't feel as refreshed as when I got home when I was sitting down to watch TV.
Mm.
Like, there is literally no difference. I'm sitting down looking at stuff.
Yeah.
One makes you feel like, cool, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
The other makes you feel like, oh God, I just can't wait to get back. Maybe for you, it's like, I can't properly switch off for whatever reason until I've finished that last class in the evening.
Mm.
And I don't know what that is, because as you said, it's not going to be the physical element of it.
No, I think it's the same thing as the mental fatigue that would create of just having to be on and be engaged for that long. And I think the fact knowing that I can shut off at 5 versus having to stay until 8 is very, like, allows you to spend all your energy within that time, so you can be more effective and be more productive.
But I wonder what that is. I wonder what it, like, because, yeah, it's clearly not a physical thing. It's clearly just, there's some like mental budgeting we do when we just call it a day. And then that's when we relax, and that's when we start maybe recovering for the next day.
But that's it. That's what in my unscientific opinion, that's exactly what that is you've got so many ounces of energy you can spend on certain tasks. If you know at 5 p.m. you don't have to go out there and shout at people for 2 hours, you're going to dump that budget into programming, marketing, whatever it is I'm doing for the day.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. So again, for me at the start, it was just like, oh, it's weird that I've got more time, but I haven't made any more time. But you do have more energy. So, and I think on what I was talking about earlier, where there's like, I have a day where I can do like a week's worth of work in a day. It just shows that you don't need time. You need like energy, or you need to like, you need to be productive, not just busy, because I could sit on my computer, even if I didn't touch my phone or whatever, on my computer for like 6 hours and do absolutely nothing. Or I could come in, but I've got 20 minutes. I'm going to write this person's program for the week and deliver the best shit you could write. Just depends on how much energy you've got, how clear your mind is, how like all these other variables that contribute towards you being productive and how well they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sleep.
I'd agree with that. Sleep's a big one.
Yeah. Trackman, you said this earlier. You're looking at your sleep recovery.
Yeah, so it was one of the main things. So I switched my workout schedule from the evening to the morning, and the main reason was that by the time I finished at 8, I'd get back home by 8:30, especially if I was chatting stupid stuff to Rowan, then I would eat, and by the time I eat, it's like 9:30. And then not only have you eaten 1 hour before bed, which everyone says is a terrible idea, you've basically got an hour to get yourself chilled out. And that's actually a pretty big ask. So
another thing that, and this is my understanding of it, it might not be actually factually correct, but I'll say it anyway, is your HRV is your ability to go into and out of states of stress. So So if you have a really high HRV, it's a really high recoverability, heart rate variability, you can go from 0 to 100 really quick, and you can come out of 100 back to 0 really quick. So if you've got a really low HRV score and a really low recoverability, it's going to take you longer to come out of that. So if you're training for an hour and you finish at 8 p.m. and you're not out of that state until 10 p.m. when you're trying to go to sleep and you're still wired, versus if you finished at 8 p.m. and then you were settled by 9, you have that hour of downtime, it wouldn't be as bad.
Yeah, so I'd agree with that.
Risking that training in the evening is obviously...
I've made mistakes. Well,
guys, we're going to cancel all our evening classes because it's bad for your recovery.
I've made mistakes of trying to do work way too late.
Yeah.
And then your brain's just on, and I literally have to meditate to fall asleep or something like that, because you just sat there like, this is going to take 2 hours. Brain just spinning and spinning and spinning, and it's like, no way. But yeah, sleep's obviously a big one. Like, just watched that Joe Rogan with Matt Walker.
That's an old one.
The old one. It's still the best one.
He's just done a new one with Rich. I think he did one with Rich Roll.
Okay.
Matt Walker, which is, again, similar stuff, but it's just fresh. So I think I'll give that a listen. I haven't listened to it yet. I think it was Rich Roll.
Yeah, it's just worth, it's one of those ones that you can keep coming back to. Well, that Matt Walker anyway, I think someone you can keep coming back to. Apparently his Why We Sleep book is good for falling asleep, but I think the podcast is a lot more engaging.
The podcast is a lot more engaging. I think I learned more from the podcast than I did the book. I did the book. Also, there's a website, and I think it's a, like almost a satire website, is they go around writing articles that debunk popular science articles. So there was an article about the Matthew Walker book saying that he's cost people thousands of hours of their life by making them sleep for 9 hours when you don't need to sleep for 9 hours. And there's all these things that he says, this is not study back, there's this, and this is bullshit, and this is a straight lie. I'll try and find it. It's quite funny.
That's interesting. I mean, you gotta, at some point, it's like, I'm not going to keep researching the latest sleep research.
No.
So I'm going to see, this guy sounds pretty credible. Do I trust him? Do I not? At the end, like...
Well, you can try it, and if it works, it works.
Yeah.
Regardless of you, if I didn't need that extra hour sleep, so I've lost it from my life, versus you woke up feeling really good, then who cares?
Yeah. And if you're one of those people who's like, I sleep 6 hours and I'm completely fine, I sleep 5 hours, I'm completely fine, it's like, cool.
Cool. Yeah. So he's big on that, as like saying that there's health and physiological damage to be, if you don't sleep this amount of time, right? He's quite hard on that. Like, you can give yourself cancer by losing an hour of sleep a day.
Yeah, which I believe. I think there's a big part of it is like having enough self-awareness. That's a really, really hard thing to build up. But like body awareness,
yeah,
you probably can't tell if you're giving yourself cancer. I'm almost certain that there's no one's that self-aware. But like, presumably, if you feel completely fine, genuinely, and you've tried the 8 hours approach and you don't feel any better, then maybe you just...
But then how do you know that you're not fine? Like, what if you've never been fine? What if, like... So I often wonder, I think it'd be interesting to be able to experience people's feelings, like emotional or physical, like to be like, how sad is that person? Or how much did that injury hurt them? To then to be like, oh, that's like a 1 out of 10, something a little
you
bit.
You must see that a lot when people are training here, when they're like, they're acting like they're flagged or like redlining, and you're wondering, are you really? Are you making the faces that you're tired? Are you actually like...
Because then what if you could experience that somewhere you could like, you say you're the way your body feels and you feel pretty good. And I was able to like have sensors put on me that were able to let me feel what you felt. And I'd be like, how the fuck do you live like this? This is agony. But if you're like, this is normal, this is perfectly fine.
I was thinking about it. So like, the more you train, the more you get used to sort of being in these different states of being exhausted. And you probably are a lot better than me at being like, right, I'm at a 7.5 instead of an 8. I can push just slightly harder.
In theory, yeah, I think I would be, but I don't always listen to that. I'm pretty sure I listen to that. Like, hips feeling a bit funky today. You're going to squat 400 pounds? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, be all right.
Yeah, I'm a bad advocate for that.
I think it's more on the cardio stuff. So on the cardio stuff, it's like, you basically get to a point where, I don't know, above out of 5 out of 10, you're tired and you're breathing heavily and it's uncomfortable. And it's like, right, okay, well, then there's gradients of that. And there's even gradients like lying on the floor feeling awful. Like on Sunday, I felt sick. But was that a 10 out of 10? No, it was probably like a 7 and a bit out of 10. Okay. But I still felt sick at the end of it.
Are you able to understand when a workout was a 10 out of 10 and it was a 7 out of 10? And even if you felt the same after each, that it's not the workout that was the difference? Like, no. For example, if you were like, I did a 7 and it felt like a 10, but I know it was a 7 and it was a 7 and it felt like a 10 because... I slept like shit or ate like shit yesterday.
No, I'm not that in tune. Okay. But I can... I'm starting to get a bit more clued up on the difference between like... I don't know what a 10 is, but like a 7 and an 8. Like something where, oh my God, I'm dying. And oh my God, I'm dying. I'm really dying.
But then that's all subjective, right? Because if you say, I don't know what a 10 out of 10 feels like, is... That's very noble of you to say that I've never experienced some of the hardest things in my life. But then what's the hardest thing you've ever think you've done? Let's keep it in here.
In the gym?
Yeah.
It was probably an assault bike one or something like that.
But then was it the hardest thing or was it the worst you felt?
The worst I felt will have been some of the recent rows I've done.
Okay.
Just because you're literally lying there like... I think it's like when you're doing 1,000 meter rows or 750 meter rows intervals and you're on interval 2 out of 3.
But yours are probably as much of that. It's probably emotional of you crying inside going, why can't I do this 1 second faster?
That's true. And then there's also the I'm on interval 2 out of 3. I feel fucking dog shit.
I've got to again.
I've got to go again.
Yeah, so I've asked people before and had this conversation about what's the worst workout you've ever done. And I don't have one. Like, I don't have one singular workout that works out in my mind. And I think and not to sound like a dick, but I think there's been so many workouts where I've turned up for, where I've pushed myself so hard that I was like, that was fucking terrible, and felt absolutely awful afterwards, where it wasn't even that bad a workout.
Yep.
So it's not more about the workout was terrible. It was more of a, I pushed myself so hard that that made that terrible. Because I would say like, oh, I did this and it was fucking disgusting. And someone else do it and be like, oh yeah, it was all right. Even if they finish it in the same time at the same weights and whatever. But it's just that maybe on that day I wasn't 100% recovered, and I still tried to push myself like I was 100% recovered. So it just felt way worse than it could be. And that would be one of the ones I remember as being like a fucking terrible workout.
What about the ones where you, not through a lack of skill, but for whatever reason, you thought you could be able to get through X number of reps a lot quicker, and it's not one of those where like it times out really quickly, but you just stuck in a hole.
That happens about 3 times a week. me overestimate my ability.
It's not so much that, it's like everyone, like let's say for whatever reason, you're in a class and everyone else is doing it just fine, yeah, and you can't do. Like I get this sometimes with burpees because I just find them very difficult. I don't hate them for some reason. I look at them like great burpees, but then
I'm glad you said hate.
Carry
on.
Yeah, I hate burpees, and no, I don't hate them, and
good cover.
Yeah, and then sometimes I'll be like, I should be getting through this way quicker, and you can see everyone around you is getting through this way quicker, and then you're like, what is wrong? Those can be very disheartening, and that can be a tough spot to be when you're tired and disheartened. It's not necessarily the best place to be to push yourself really hard.
That's not you looking after yourself. That's not you loving yourself. That's you putting yourself through the ringer, which you got to do every now and again.
Yeah.
I have days like that where I'm like, why are burpees so hard? Why am I so bad at burpees? But then I think there's also times where you're not as fit as you are. And I have been through this cycle more in the last like couple months than I ever have before, of feeling like I'm jamming, I'm feeling really good, and then going into like, I hate working out. This is boring. And oh, I can't push today, or I don't have the, because sometimes when we do like the rise workouts, it's like there's a workout, then a lifting piece, then a workout again, and I do the first workout like there's no way I can do anything else after this, I'm dead. And I think the when you're feeling good and you're feeling really fit and you're in a good period in your training cycle, is your ability to recover from that and then the lifting piece and then still have the energy to go again, that's what increases. But your performance for the first part that you did will probably be pretty similar. So let's say I do workout one and my best time ever would be like 10 minutes. Then a really unfit Craig goes and he could still probably do it in like 10 and a half, 11 minutes. So it's a similar score, but just doesn't have the capability to do parts two and three. Yeah. So I think that's what I notice the most about when I'm not able to do parts. I don't think I lose the ability to do the one thing that I'm always capable of doing. Like let's say my max set of double unders is always going to be whatever, or the max weight I can lift in a workout is always going to be a pretty similar weight. It's what can I do after that workout, part two, part three, that starts to get affected.
You must have come through enough of these cycles though, where it's like you have a period where you're like, I'm feeling really good, I'm feeling really fit, I'm feeling really in shape.
And I'm then, really good, I beat Cook in 3 workouts this week.
Yeah, 100%. And then you like, well, that would never happen. And then
I beat him on, what is it, this Monday?
Nice.
Crushed him.
But equally, like, I've been quite good with myself recently, which is like, I noticed on the downswings, I'm able to say to myself, that's okay.
Yeah.
We've gone through this enough times that you know that like a downswing precedes an upswing. But weirdly, I'm never cruising at the upswing going, well, I'm going to crash at some point, which I don't know how I've convinced myself.
Yeah, you're kind of like going along like, oh, I've gotten better, I'm good now. Yeah. This is me. And then you forget that's going to drop off eventually because it's not sustainable.
Yeah, but then when you do drop off, you tell yourself, oh, it was okay. Like, and then,
I'll get back to that.
And that self-love kind of helps you get out of that state.
Do you ever get to that point and you're like, so you're jamming and you're like, oh, I've unlocked this new level of my fitness now and I'm going to be here forever. Forgetting that you drop off. You go through the drop off and you're like, fuck, I'm never going to be, this is so hard. How was I that fit before? I'm never going to be able to do this, never go back. When you get to that down part, you're pretty good at going, oh yeah, that's okay. I'm just not as fit at the moment.
I'm good with my general weight. What I'm now learning is the fitness part, like you said, because I'm exactly been in that like three times now. And I'm just starting to realize that there's a pattern with that as well. So it's like, yeah, you feel great. You feel like you're able to, and then you're able to do all these new endurance feats.
So there's people who probably aren't in tune to this, as you've just said you are, and they're in the gym and it's like, oh, why can't I do this anymore? Oh, this feels so hard. It's that cycle of you can't stay on all the time. You can't be like year round ready to fucking crush 100% of the time. So you go through this part where the body's like peaking and you're dropping off and you lose some of the ability that you had. Is some of the girls and, oh, why can't I do this? This felt really hard. It's just like, well, yeah, you're probably just in the slump, come back up. And especially women as well, because that monthly cycle can, depending on when, we're not going to get into this now, but I will find someone that we can have a conversation with, because neither of us have the right to be able to speak about this. But there are certain points in a month when a woman is going to be, her performance is going to dip and her strength is going to dip. And there's times when it will improve as well as us. So learning that goes, figure out your cycle.
Yeah, definitely talk to someone
about when you're training around that. We'll get someone on to speak about that, because I think that'd be very interesting.
I actually got it from bodybuilding and weight loss, because the first few times I did it was always to do with, like, I wanted to get below a certain body fat or a certain, and you realize your diet's on point and your weight is on point for a bit, and then you get back up. And you can either sort of take a, I mean, it's easier said than done, but you can either sort of beat yourself up about it and say, oh my God, I'm so out of shape. Yeah. Or you can just be like, this is an upswing, this is a downswing, and where's my general trend heading?
Yeah.
So if I am now at 11 or 12% body fat and I feel good, then if that goes up a bit because I have a few stressful weeks at work or whatever, then I just check the overall trend. Is like, am I better now than I was a year ago? But that's
100%.
That's been like 6 or 7 cycles. So I'm now realizing that that same pattern applies in fitness as well.
Well, it's like those like progress inspirational illustrations on Instagram where it's like what people see and what actually happens. Yes. It's like the road to being successful is like this massive winding detour, which lands you like, if you want to travel forward 2 meters, you've actually got to take a 25 meter detour to get 2 meters ahead.
Yeah, that's why I don't buy into that 1% better every day, because I don't believe that's how we work. I think it takes a long time to ingrain habits, and you'll probably get like 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, minus 10.
Yeah.
Like minus 4.
But then what I think, bigger picture, like what you said about, am I better than I was a year ago? So even if it's like your rate of progress is up, down, your down is still probably ahead of up. You know what I mean? I don't think
yes.
And even like maybe it's 1% every single day is not realistic, and you shouldn't use that as a mark, because you're going to have shit days or shit weeks, whatever. But I think the concept of always trying to be better than you were is always the 1%.
Like, yeah, like at the high level, I completely agree with you.
It's just I'm not trying to shit on your statement, just we've got a t-shirt that says better every day, so I'm trying to defend it.
No, well, I know what you mean. But I think that you can put yourself, you've already said it, is you want to be overall better every day.
Yeah.
And you always want to keep pushing for that. But to say I'm going to get 1%, but like just compounding, if you get 1% better every day after like 3 years, you would be Elon Musk or something like that.
Yeah. And I think this is why better every day, or we say, one of the basic values is best effort, because better every day is not necessarily attainable. You can try to, but as long as you put your best effort into getting better every day, whether you actually get better every day doesn't matter, because you might not have as much time, energy, or resources to get better. But as long as you gave the best of what you had, then that's the equivalent of doing the best or 1% better.
It's also a prerequisite. You need to have that mindset, like no matter what, because if you say, oh, well, maybe some days I won't be better, that might be true, but you've got to keep pushing for it. So I fully believe in like getting on board with the concept, but I think like setting that as your expectation, I'm going to make linear progress or compounding linear progress, which is definitely not happening every single day. That might be a bit unrealistic, because given that you have these swings, but like you said, aspire to it, recognize that trend should certainly be there.
Yeah.
That's certainly what I've found when it comes to body composition, at least.
We'll shut it down on this thought is, lately I've been trying to ban people from using the word hate, and you just said it with burpees, and people use it as a throwaway statement. And the word hate is obviously like just it covers a lot of emotions. You can just be like, oh, I hate when that happens, and it's just like you spilt your drink, you don't actually hate, there's no hate there. Or it's just like, I hate burpees. It's like you don't actually hate them. You don't lay awake and like crying about how much you hate burpees. But then I just think getting out of the habit of using that as a term to have a negative, or because obviously you're gonna have negative emotions, you can't control that, he's never always on and super positive all the time, or most people aren't anyway. But I think trying to be like, because I've just noticed a bunch of people lately go, oh, I hate that, I hate this. It's just like, well, you don't hate it, don't use that word, like fucking ban it. And I've actually banned someone from using it in the gym because, oh, I hate this. It's just like, yeah, fine, you can dislike something, but if you feel that strongly about something, why are you wasting your energy? It's like saying, I hate Jordan. me having that feeling towards him is spending more energy on Jordan than it's worth me hating.
How do you vocalize a dislike, a strong dislike for something?
You don't. Why would you?
So you literally think you should... You're wasting mental effort to even focus on what you're disliking, and that's dragging you down to some degree. Yeah,
because like we talked about, you've only got so many like measures of energy in a day, whereas there's time and effort you can put into everything. If you're putting time and effort into not enjoying something, what's the fucking point?
Yeah.
And again, I'll be honest, I haven't fully formalized my argument for banning the word hate yet, and I'm still trying to understand and decipher it myself to what my stance is on how you should feel about things, because obviously you have to be pretty onto it to be able to decipher what I actually feel when I say I hate something. And if it's just a throwaway statement, then if you're like, oh, I hate this, or you're driving, it's just, oh, I hate when people do that. It's just like, don't waste the energy, just ignore it. And yeah, that's hard to do, but when you get to the point where it's just like, oh, that guy's just cut me up, fucking let him go, fine, whatever, is you're probably going to be better off than if you stressed about the hate that you're going to...
The good parts about it are that you're not wasting energy vocalizing something that's not even true. You probably don't hate a lot of these things.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. But I think it's getting to the point where you don't feel it either.
Yeah. And by vocalizing, there's a lot of things that you could stand to be a lot more detached from in a good way.
Yeah.
If you didn't spend the effort to...
I think it's noticing stuff. I think I did a course once, and they play with the concept of noticing things, and it's a exercise used to not judge people. And it was for doing PT consults, when someone comes in, and it's kind of a sales tool as well, is when someone tells you something, is you have to notice it, but you can't judge them. So there's no like reaction to what they say. So Jordan's like, come in, he's just like, oh yeah, I want to lose weight, but I eat McDonald's every day. So rather than me going, well, you're a fucking idiot, not going to lose weight, is going, okay, well, you eat McDonald's every day and you want to lose weight. That way I have no positive or negative reinforcement, or I've not made a decision or wasted any energy or thought. I've just noticed it, and it just is.
That's a really, really good skill.
Yeah.
That is a really, like, if you can build that, that would just help you empathize with people in such a much better way.
Right. Versus, this guy cut me up. So you go, this guy cut me up. I haven't wasted any energy going, fuck, this guy's cut me up. Or wasted the energy of going, fuck, this guy cut me up. Don't be mad about it. So trying to get to a point where you noticing that someone's walked into the room, not like, oh, that guy's got weird hair. Like just actually having an unbiased opinion on things.
Yeah, being able to take things in without having to lay a judgment on them straight away.
Yeah, just notice.
I don't 100% subscribe to the fact you shouldn't vocalize any dislike for things, which I'm not sure is what you're saying, but there's got to be a point where you will express, there'll be times when you're able to express something, and it's either, should you have throwaway comments where you dislike something? Maybe not. Maybe that's a good point, because it probably does impact your thinking. But there will be times when you need to say, I don't like something. And saying you don't like it is not dwelling on it. Yeah. It is that there's utility in saying that.
And but I think I agree with you for sure. Like you can, if someone asks your opinion on something and you have a negative opinion on, you can show your opinion, definitely. Yeah. But I think when people actively go out of their way to say how much they hate something is a waste of anybody's energy, and you're bringing a negative experience to the person you're speaking to, that's a waste of everyone's time.
Yeah.
So if you don't like someone, is you don't tell that person, you don't tell someone you don't like that person. But if someone was just like, oh yeah, this person did this, he goes, yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that person. That's fine. That's a conversation you can have. Well, and this probably isn't fine, but that's the point where I'm at now. So if I didn't like someone, I wouldn't actively go and tell Jordan, oh, that guy's a dick, I don't like him. But if Jordan's just like, oh, this guy did this weird thing, he's an idiot, I'd be like, oh yeah, that person annoyed me too. That's the level I'm at now, which I'm
going to put you in a weird place, which once you vocalize it, you feel a need that you have to stick in that position as well. So let's say that someone makes a bad first impression on you and you say, I don't really like that guy. If you, once you've said it once, it actually becomes harder to move away in the future, even if that person's absolutely fine. You just got a bad first impression.
Yeah, and no one's perfect, obviously, but I'm trying to get to the point where, and I'd be really proud of myself if I can get to this, and I've got a lot of work to do, where I can like have no judgment of anything, but just to be able to the point where I just notice and, oh, that's this person and that's this. And surely because it's a waste of your time and energy and your happiness if you're creating these negative, if you're having these negative conversations about something else which doesn't actually matter to you at all. Like there's going to be examples, yeah, there's going to be extreme cases where you're going to feel nothing but hate. Like if someone killed your family, you'd be full with hate for that person that killed your family, of course. And I guess there might be bordering spiritual in terms of like forgiving people for whatever they've done and stuff like that. But again, that's down the line, we'll talk about later. But my main thing is, it comes from training for me, is having positive self-talk versus negative talk is such a powerful tool. So the other day I did a 10-minute bike test and I smashed my previous record by like 17 calories. So that's a huge increase. It was over 10% better and I haven't really been training for it. And it was because on the day I told myself, it's like, I'm gonna do it. I wasn't like, oh, don't quit, don't whatever. It's just like, I've got this in my head. I wasn't even sure if I was gonna do it, but during the day I just had this feeling, I was like, I've got this. And then during the bike, whilst I was going, the whole time I was just like, you've got it, keep going, and everything. And I've trained myself, and I've been doing this for a while, to try and use positive reinforcement and positive talk and positive language versus negative. So trying to, even when I say to people now, I try not to cue people with don't stop. Or people like...
keep going instead of don't stop.
Keep going instead of don't stop is the classic example. But then just using like, if you use words like dying, or like, oh, I'm on the back, I'm dying, or this is killing me, or whatever, whatever. It's just that all you're thinking about being dead, and being dead is not moving, so you're not going to move as fast. So trying to like positive self-talk. And then it comes to like, well, hate's not a very positive word. So if you're in a conversation and then you're saying hate, then you're filling the room with a negative word. I'm just kind of like, well, that's just a waste of, that's upsetting everybody.
Yeah.
And I've had conversations with people and they've said stuff, and what they've said hasn't necessarily bothered me at all, but they've said it in a way, or they've said, oh, I hate this. And it was a nothing comment. It's just like, oh, I hate when so-and-so does this. I'm like, no, I'm just annoyed that you hate something. And that's creating a negative experience for me that person's done. So now I'm trying to get to a point where I like, just notice it. This person hates that. Move on. And then try and not use any negative self-talk.
There's a big book that I read not too long ago, which is talking about getting out your own way. And I think it's a big part about that, which is, like you said, you have these small, tiny little acts individually. They probably don't contribute a great deal of you saying, I'm dying, I'm killing myself, I hate this. Yeah, you can get away with it once, twice, 10, 100 times, but eventually it does have a compounding, very, very minor negative effect. But one of the things that comes up is, I'll take an example, is one of the frustrations I had with my row was how long it was taking. And a big part of it was just about getting out your own way, phrasing it from, this is really hard, this is really difficult, this is taking too long, just saying, there is a process here.
Yeah.
You will get it done.
Yeah. And how easy is it to do that when you think about it? When you're aware enough to be like, I'm associating this with it being hard and taking too long and being a pain in the ass, versus like, I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm getting fitter in this process, and just flipping it into the exact same thing, but just flipping it into a positive from a negative.
Yeah. I mean, I literally took 2 weeks off because I was getting frustrated with it. And then I just said to myself, look, you will get it done. I think a huge part is getting out your own way. Stop using words that are holding you back. Stop worrying so much about...
And I think the words are the first step, right? Is trying to like just, even if it's just tricking yourself into using a more positive spin on a negative feeling, then the negative feeling will become a positive feeling.
Yeah. I think that's how it starts. I think how you start talking to yourself, it is a trick initially, but then after a while, it actually does change the way you think.
Yeah. And then you can go from like... Then you start to become, and this is something that's very new to me as well, is starting to appreciate, be more present and appreciate and be more grateful for stuff. So this is what I found is now I'm meditating again. I've been doing it for a while, like quite a long time, and doing guided meditations, listening to stuff. If anyone finds any good ones, let me know. I will share one I found the other day, because I don't like the fluffy ones, like anything about like not positive energy and like let energy into the room and stuff like that, I don't really get into. But stuff that gives you physical things you can action whilst you're meditating, so like breathe out, feel this, and become very aware of your present state and your body, and use this as, if you start thinking about a thought, let it come, let it go, but then center yourself around your breathing again. And then you start to all of a sudden listen to things, and people talk about how like you become more grateful because you appreciate where you are in the present day, and it just makes you feel like day-to-day tasks become more rewarding because you're just more aware and more grateful for everything that you've got. And that's kind of, I'm not there yet, but I'm on that track of understanding what that would feel like to be like, cool, I'm sit here and this is a fucking glorious day and I'm sat here breathing. And I think that's ties back into that a little bit as well.
I think what you said at the start was massive as well, as being able to train yourself to not place a judgment on something as it comes in is a really difficult but really good skill, especially like when it comes to things like Instagram as well. You can really, like you said, you can really taint your mindset if you're constantly bombarding yourself with like negative tones coming from, I mean, blaming social media is a classic, and it's just a bit
fucking
bit,
social media.
It's just a bit done now, but I do think that like the things you let in on a day-to-day basis can influence. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on about what's happening in Israel and Palestine. I'm not going to comment on it, but like if you're reading a lot of that and getting aggravated,
why aren't you going to comment on it?
Because more people need opinions on the Israel-Palestine conflict.
I thought about this. I thought, I wonder if John's going to bring this up.
Yeah, I genuinely don't have an opinion on it, but you can read a lot of stuff, and it can influence the way you spend your day. And it's like, well, on one hand, you do have an obligation to keep yourself informed, I suppose. But on the other hand, if all you're going to do is you're going to see information, judge it, and respond to it according to how you already feel anyway. So you're not really evaluating things objectively, and then bring that energy, if it's negative, into the rest of your day. I'm not sure that's helpful.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure that. I think it might be counterproductive based on everything that you said. So being able to just look at information, whether that's someone spouting an odd haircut that you haven't seen before, but just saying that's different as opposed to that hair looks shit.
Yeah, but I think even saying it's different is, I guess there's a judgment there.
I don't know, because...
Because having zero judgment would be like, that person's had a haircut.
No, because there's objective. I think there's living in a fairyland, which is like, I'm never going to judge anything ever. I'm never going to react to anything ever, being like, that person's hair is different, versus saying that person's hair is different and I don't like it.
Yeah,
I think that's the difference there. And by the way, I find this very unlikely. I'm going to stick to this 100% of the time, but I do like the idea.
Yeah,
of just being able to like take things in a lot more passively.
We can work on that.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right. Well, we've been going for fucking ages.
Sweet.
And just on that point is as I'm sitting back and kind of thinking about everything we spoke about today, there's a bunch of times where I was like, that chick on social media was annoying and having like negative. And I think it's all tongue in cheek, like joke, oh, I hate burpees and stuff, is you're never going to be able to get rid of all that. And I think if you can bring it back to being like what you actually feel about, like I can go, oh, you're a dick, whatever, whatever, and call someone something, doesn't necessarily mean that you're spending that energy being having those emotions about it. So I'm not saying like you can't talk shit with your mates and say that you hate burpees. I'm just saying, just like understand that if you are saying that I hate something, do you actually hate it? Is it worth spending your energy on it? Then yeah, not just to bantering with the boys.
I think it's a worthwhile aspiration.
Yeah Jordan, that was an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thanks again.
And I don't think we covered many fitness topics there, but
we got bits and pieces.
I think that was a thrilling episode.
That was good. I had a good time.
Thanks, Jay. What day is it? Have a good weekend, team. It'll be Thursday when this drops, so have a lovely weekend, and we'll speak to you soon.
Later, bitches.